Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Jim Traber coming up at 9:30. It's a Monday, so we'll get to pick his brain about everything that happened over the weekend from the college football, the NFL yesterday, some World Series. It starts on Tuesday. Maybe even get his early thoughts on what we've seen out of the Oklahoma City Thunder. College football, Oklahoma State and Iowa State played a game that we talked about all week, and it was almost exactly what we thought. Oklahoma, Kansas did not. We'll get into those. High school football off the top, results from Friday night, and then also what the district standings look like with 2 weeks left to play before the playoff berths are clinched, and we figure out what the bracket looks like for that second weekend, Friday night. In November. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. You can talk about any of those things. Whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, there are a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is KADSAM.com. Also, the Paragon Communications app. The app has the Penny News, the radio stations, Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. We'll tell you throughout the week where we're going to be with those two things. And then also, if you miss the show entirely, Skinny on Sports Podcast is on KADSAM.com. Or you can also find that one on iTunes. If you do iTunes, just subscribe, and then you will be alerted when a new podcast drops. Good morning, Jared.
How are you? How's your weekend?
Weekend was good. Went to Wellington, Texas on Saturday. Watch the Sayre Eagle 5th and 6th grade dominate the Skyrockets 26-0. It was going to be 32-0 on about a 90-yard run by old Wyatt Compton.
Oh, yeah?
Got called back for a penalty, literally on the last play of the game. But he scored one. It was a dominant performance from the Eagles. Haven't seen those very much, so it was good to see. And now got the old the end of the year tournament at Canadian this weekend.
Already end of year tournament.
Already. Play Wheeler first, 3:00 on Saturday. If you win, you get to play Canadian at 7:00. If you lose, you got to come back and play Sunday morning to try to win the consolation trophy.
Well, so, how do you feel about it? How are their chances?
I'm trying to remember. I don't think I was at the Wheeler game, but it seems like it was close. Chances to win the whole thing?
Yeah.
Not very good. It's just the honest. Just be honest. Canadian and Merritt especially. The Merritt 5th and 6th grade bunch is pretty good. They have blown through the league 7-0. And golly, their combined score, it's just ridiculous. 200-20 maybe. Something like, I'm making those up. But it has been domination by that 5th and 6th grade Oiler team. A lot like the 3rd and 4th grade Sayre Eagles have done. As they finished undefeated after winning down at Wellington. So they're the number one seed in the 3rd and 4th grade division. And they have dominated as well all through. So,
well, good.
Definite favorites going in to the tournaments out there at Canadian this weekend. Merritt 5th and 6th and the Sayre 3rd and 4th. But you know what? That's why they play the game. What'd you do?
Not a lot of nothing, really. Watched a lot of football. That was kind of the plan.
Didn't
get to go anywhere.
Didn't look like you went to the game.
No, I got kind of guilted into staying home because I kind of forgot that I was actually at a game Thursday night. And my girl's like, Dad, can we not go out to eat? You're not going anywhere tonight, are
you? Sure
you
can. Weatherford's got all kinds of cool restaurants.
Well, I'm sure we can get some food at Swazoo at the game. you know what? You're right. Let's go out. So we went to friends and we hung out with friends, ran into friends. It was fun. But no, Saturday, just watched a lot of football. We'll talk about that. And yesterday, kind of took a break from had the football on, but wasn't, you know, kind of just for the sake of looking at scores. But I was doing a lot of stuff around the house. So pretty day. I wanted to be outside a lot, so I was doing that too. So nothing crazy. Didn't have any great tournaments to go to like you did. But that'll come because Katie's already started basketball, so those are coming. Our weekends are about to get really busy.
Yeah, we're headed to Mountain View tonight.
Okay.
For some basketball.
There you go.
Like
Mountain View, they have good facilities. I assume they're playing in their newer gym.
Your guess is good as mine.
I bet they are.
Your guess is good as mine. We're just going to tool around town until we find it, I guess. Look for a bus.
Just find the bus and go. I bet you they are. Speaking of basketball, my goodness, it's October 25th. You know, it starts a week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
Some small school basketball on the Paragon Network. I forget who. I'd have to look it up, but I know it. Because that's technically you can start after November 1. So some are choosing to play on November 2. Usually it's the first Friday of November. Everyone else kicks off or tips off, I should say.
Yeah.
And I know that's coming too. So that's.
Listen.
We're talking off air, man. I got to get ready for Big Oak basketball.
We're not there yet.
We got a lot of football left.
Yeah. Let's talk about what happened on Friday night in the, you know, the two districts that we kind of zero in on just because of the proximity to us and who can hear us and that kind of thing. As I thought, you were a little bit less more hesitant to say, maybe just because of your alma mater, but Clinton did whip Weatherford like we thought, 42-0. So the Red Tornadoes topped the district 5-0 with 74 district points. Bethany,
well, we all know why I was hesitant to say.
Yeah, we do. Weatherford, let's see, Bethany.
Cancel culture.
Went to Chickasha and won 38-20, so they are also 5-0. 60 district points. Of course, the Elks won on Thursday. Newcastle put it on Elgin 44-21. So Newcastle's 3-2, Chickasha 2-3. Those are the five teams that still have a chance to make the playoffs. Here's the good news for the Brown and White. After the results on Friday night, it doesn't matter what happens from here on out. The Elk City Elks are going to be in the playoffs. Period. End of story.
You've
no
sat
matter
down,
what.
You've done the math.
I have done the math.
They cannot be eliminated.
They cannot because 45 plus 19 is 64. And the most points the Elks could lose in two games is 30. The most points Chickasha could gain is 30. Those two numbers are 60. They are less than 64.
Okay.
So it can't happen.
Can't happen.
The spread is too far. Now Chickasha can beat Newcastle and get in. But they cannot knock the Elks out, so the Elks are going to be in the playoffs.
So it's just a matter of positioning at this point.
That's correct.
Okay,
at least for Elk City, Newcastle,
right,
Chickasha,
right.
Those two teams could switch places
for the fourth spot,
depending on how the last two games play out. Obviously, Chickasha has to beat Newcastle coming up on Friday night.
Right.
That is the first thing that has to happen for the Chicks to make it. If that does, then there will be no bigger Brown and White fans in the state of Oklahoma on the November the 5th, then the Chickasha Fighting Chicks.
That's right.
Because regardless of how Chickasha's game with Elgin turns out, they could, you know, actually, if they win, and it's just, but they need the Elks to win.
Yeah, because they need to give Newcastle that loss.
Well, and you don't want it to be a three-way tie. If it was just a two-way tie, Chickasha would win the tiebreaker over Newcastle because they would have beat them.
Right.
So they need, you know, but if they could still get in with Newcastle beating Elk, just depends on what happens with those district points.
That would
all be kind of in flux. But anyhow, that's where it's at. But way bigger fish to fry on Friday night, because if the Elks can go over to Clinton and get a win against the Red Tornadoes, now we're talking about district title on the line multiple different ways for that last week. And then all of a sudden, you'd see the exact opposite. This week, nobody in Elk City is rooting for Clinton. Next week, if the Elks were able to beat Clinton on Friday night, everybody in town would be rooting for Clinton. That way, with the win against Newcastle, Clinton beat Bethany, it becomes a two-way tie for the district title, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Elk City would win that, courtesy of the win against Clinton on Friday night. So, a lot of different scenarios still up in the air, but the one positive, the one good thing is there's no way the Elks cannot make the playoffs.
I think we should have known that from the roar we heard from the locker room in Cash after the game.
Well, it wasn't official.
I think they were told, guys, you just put yourself in a really good position.
It was a really good position, but...
But it wasn't, yeah.
It wasn't official.
Did I say Thursday or Friday night?
Yeah Thursday
They had
night.
To wait for Friday stuff to happen, but they happened the way they thought they would. So, but hey, two more games, take care of business, you know, but... Now we're looking at 4A2, really more than 4A1 sometimes.
Yeah, Cushing beat Blanchard on Friday night. So right now it shows Blanchard second in that district. That's all going to work itself out because Hera plays both of those teams, Blanchard and Cushing, to finish the season. So that'll all work itself out with results on the field. Now, the biggest win of Friday night was over in Thomas.
How about that?
The Merritt Oilers went over to Thomas and knocked off the Terriers 29-14. And so now Merritt sets in a tie for fourth. Here's the problem. It shows fourth by themselves. The Burns Flat Sayre score has not been updated on the OSSA rankings website. Burns Flat won that game.
Right.
So Merritt, Burns Flat are both 2-3. Texoma and Thomas both 1-4. It looks for all the world like this district, fourth place in the district, is going to come down to Merritt, Burns Flat at Merritt, week 10.
I love it when district titles come down to week 10, but I think there's going to be even more drama when it comes down to a last playoff spot in week 10. So that game right there at Merritt, and Merritt's playing really good football right now.
Merritt looks like they're way in control of the points, but Burns Flats hasn't been added. You know what the final score of that thing was? It was over 15-point win, wasn't it? Burns Flat over Sayre.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was 50-something to 30-something.
You have to look at this other people, but because that was alerting my phone, too, Friday night. Had a lot of buzzes going on Friday night with my phone. did not mean it that way. I have to look that up.
I got it right here.
Do you got it?
Yep. Da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, 54-35. 19-point.
Yeah, I knew they won.
Yeah, I knew it was 50-something, 30-something. Yeah. Right? So, yeah, that means so you put 15 on here. Merritt's 20 points ahead of Burns Flat in the district standings, the district points, tied. So it's going to come down to that last game. Texoma is there lurking for the possibilities of the round-robin three-way tie. But the problem, I think, right now for Texoma is going to be how far. But here's the thing. They're only 57 district points behind Merritt right now. And one would think, you know, it's totally in flux, but it feels like that last game is going to be the one that makes the difference on that final spot. Because when you look at who plays who in District A1, Merritt's final two, they go to Fairview, which, you know, the Yellow Jackets are leading the district at 5-0. Just dominated Moreland on Friday night. And then after that, Burns Flat comes to Merritt. Burns Flat goes to Thomas and then hosts Thomas and goes to Merritt. Now, Burns Flat is the one of these teams that has the best chance at four wins because they don't have to play Fairview, Moreland, or Hooker anymore. They're done with them, right?
Right.
So they play Thomas, then they go to Merritt. Texoma's got Sayre and at Thomas to finish. Thomas has Burns Flat and Texoma. So, you know, everybody's playing everybody except for the Merritt game against Fairview. But the positive for the Oilers, even if they aren't able to win that one, they still kind of have a mulligan back here with Burns Flat, Dill City, and creating the three-way tie and making the points matter. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like that last game is going to be the decider between Merritt and Burns Flat. So it's going to be fun. Lots of fun for the final 2 weeks of high school football. And lots of scenarios.
Always is.
Always, it's, you know, always, tons of scenarios.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy in that in District A1, with 2 weeks to go, 7 of the 8 teams are still alive.
That's crazy to me.
That's pretty wild. You know, you normally you kind of have one or two or three, like in 4A1, you've got those three down there with Elgin, Weatherford, and Cash that are eliminated. They really don't have any chance. Only the Sayre Eagles are out of it completely in District A1. That's pretty wild that all 7 teams can figure out a way to stamp their place into the playoffs some way, somehow, throughout the last couple of weeks. So it'll be fun, a lot of fun. In high school football, just a couple of weeks away. Then all of a sudden, we'll be in playoff football. And like I said, basketball will be running simultaneously.
Yeah, I'm just going to figure out how to be in two places at once a couple of weeks, the way it looks.
No.
Not my job.
No, you don't.
Hey, by the looks of it, I think that's the first win that Merritt has over Thomas ever.
Fantastic.
I think. Could be wrong.
Sounds good. Well, I saw the text line. Is Billy not able to make the tornadoes red?
I guess not. Blame Apple for that. Or whoever invented emojis.
The emoji. I mean, a red tornado scares you a lot more than a gray one, doesn't it? No, just kidding around. We forgot
happy
to,
belated.
Forgot to wish Billy happy birthday. I even said it off air in one of the breaks, like, hey, we got to tell Billy happy birthday. Yeah. And then we got to yammering around and forgot to do
what
it.
What is he, 39? About for the fifth year in a row?
Something like that. It's happy birthday to Billy. One of our resident Red Tornado fans. We're going to talk all week about that game for sure. Kind of break it down and where strengths are for either side. Just kind of an early look for me because on Friday I started watching some of the Clinton games to familiarize myself with their players. Feels like they have the capability of scoring from any spot on the field. But if you can limit big plays, maybe you can figure out a way to make them go the length of the field and have to run play after play after play after play.
That's the key, though.
I'm positive they can score from 70 out. I'm not positive they can have like a 10-play 70-yard drive. Well, part of it is because nobody's been able to stop those 70s. You know what I'm saying?
Defending Clinton, if you key in on one guy, they got about four others.
And they kind of
alluded to that, but
they have an advantage that nobody else has.
What's that?
They have an extra blocker every play.
Oh, I know.
With the quarterback.
With the quarterback.
It's amazing to watch that happen.
Who might be their best defender as well.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
And you got a guy who likes to hit guys.
And he looks like the biggest guy on the line, too.
He does. He's a load.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
He's Caden a load. Powell. Yeah.
All right, college football. Man, isn't it amazing? Listening to, you know, driving in over the weekend, it's amazing to me just the sentiment coming out of these two games. And it's for good reason. Oklahoma looked terrible in a win against Kansas. I mean, absolutely terrible. And figured out a way to win. Oklahoma State looked really good in a loss. Up in Ames. And, you know, a lot of different things happen. You know, but it's like there's really no – like the opinion of Oklahoma State coming out of that loss – is the same as it was going in. Does that make sense? I mean, they're a good team, and they didn't do anything that would make you think less of them outside of just not winning the game. Whereas Oklahoma, you don't feel near as good about anything they're doing coming out of a win against Kansas. And isn't it funny? I can't remember a point in a season that still had Big 12 national title hopes on the line, like for real ones, where you felt worse about an Oklahoma team. They haven't been undefeated this late in the season. They haven't been 8-0 since 2004.
Exactly.
And there is no way you think that they have any chance to reach the title game like that 2004 team did in the game that we don't speak of.
Right.
It's just wild. Oklahoma State, if you'd have told me Spencer Sanders had the day that he had, I would have told you the Cowboys win that one going away.
Right.
15 of 24, 225, three touchdowns, no interceptions. He rushed for 29. Didn't turn the ball over. OSU, no, nobody did. But that was the thing. On the other side, the two most maligned big game quarterbacks in this conference both came out and played fantastic football in a big game. Purdy 27 of 33 for 307 and two scores. It was just a fantastic game, and Oklahoma State ran out of third down conversions, didn't pick one up in the second half, and that was the end. That was the difference. They could not sustain the drives, especially in the third quarter when Iowa State was coming back, taking the lead. They couldn't stay on the field to keep their defense off of it.
Yeah, and I'm with you. The way starting with the OSU game, and it went exactly how I thought it'd go, although I was very committal to be non-committal on who would win, but I thought it would be something like a three-point game. I think I even said Iowa State. I think they're not a seven-point favorite. I think if anything, it should be about three and a half point, and lo and behold, they win by three because of home field advantage, in my opinion. But, and I mean, we're inches away from maybe even tying that game up, depending on how that last drive could have gone. I didn't like the play calling on that last drive. I can really get into the nuts and bolts of it, but we don't have time. But OSU, I thought, did everything right, did everything they could. But at the end of the day, I mean, is, dare I say, the better team won?
I don't know how you can say who was the better team. I know, because they were so evenly matched. You know,
yeah.
I mean, if that game goes the way it did 10 times, I think each team wins 5 of them.
Sure.
You know, yeah, you're talking about inches. Everyone's focused on the fourth down. How about the inches on the field goal that would have tied it way back early?
Yes.
And I just got a text from an OSU fan. Those goalposts have hex on them up in Ames. That same direction too.
Right.
Except for this time, I think it was the right upright instead of the left, if I remember right, on the Quinn Sharp kick. But it was just we talked about it all week. It was always going to be a close, fairly low scoring game, and the end of the game was going to determine who won. And listen, refs are refs. The call against Xavier Hutchinson was egregiously awful. On the taunting, I mean, just ridiculous. And I did think it was funny that as soon as they called that penalty, who got the ball 3 straight times for a touchdown? Xavier Hutchinson. It was almost like Matt Campbell and Brock Purdy just flipped the double bird to the refs and just threw it to him until he got in the end zone. I thought that was pretty humorous.
I think Matt Campbell got madder at that.
Is anybody wondering what he was saying, by the way?
Oh, man.
It didn't even take a real lip reader to figure out what he was saying after that call. But and then at the end, if you watch it, I don't see how you don't assume Brennan Presley has a first down on that fourth down play. But you can't see the ball.
That's the problem.
There just wasn't an angle.
Video evidence, he's laying
across the 40. It's like it's clear he got there, but it wasn't a clear shot to show you that he got there. Is that me? Because the offensive lineman pulled him. He was laying on him. He never really went down,
yeah.
But you just couldn't see the football.
When the official came in from the bottom of your screen, I thought that spot gave it to him.
Yes, because it had to get to the yard line.
He was like half a foot, I guess, I don't know what direction it was, to the right of where the other line judge was. I thought, okay, if they go with his spot on the guy at the bottom of the screen,
yep,
that's a first down. Clearly they didn't. As soon as they put the ball down, before they even brought the change, I thought.
Yeah, because you had to get they had to get to the 40.
Right.
I mean, it had to be touching the 40, and it wasn't.
Short. Yeah,
you knew it was going to be really, really close, but you knew he didn't get it.
Yeah,
because of where the chains were marked, and it was just one of those that's that definition of, you know, the evidence has to be indisputable, and there just wasn't any.
No,
because they just couldn't. You just couldn't get a view of the ball, even though in everyone's mind watching it, you're 98% sure it was a first down because of where he was laying and the way he landed on the O-lineman that was pulling him.
Yeah, the center. What's his name? Yeah, he was pulling him forward.
Pulling him forward, and he
landed
right on him. And then when he finally hit the ground, he was across the 40, but you just couldn't see where the football was at any point in the way that play developed.
Would have been spotted if he was reaching forward with the football, like, say.
Well, yeah, because then he could have seen it.
Exactly.
That's the whole thing. He just never got it.
Yeah.
He just never got it away from his body because obviously he's protecting to not fumble. And you never got a view of the football to be able to allow Oklahoma State to get that first down. Now, it's still at the 40. I mean, that's outside of field goal range, and you know you have no idea how the thing ends. But it was just one of those where they marked it, like you said, if the other guy gets the mark, they can't overturn that. It all depended on where the spot came on the field because there was no video evidence that was going to turn it either way.
Right.
And unfortunately for the Pokes, it was half of my foot away from being a first down, but it wasn't. Now, real quick, OU. I know we're going to talk about this with Jim, but just a brutal, brutal performance. You give credit for finding a way to win. The Caleb Williams play was just off the charts, heady for a true freshman in their second start and all that. But, my God, anyone that – you almost get laughed out of the room sitting here going, well, you know, beat Tech, get a week off, and then, you know, figure things out on defense for the final stretch run. That may happen. But right now, it really looks like the Sooners are the loss is inevitable. You're just not sure which week it's going to come up and happen.
Combined losses next 4 games, 7. Buckle up.
I mean, it's pretty wild.
I got ripped apart when someone said I was too pessimistic about it, and the argument was well, they've got to figure things out. And I immediately said, you just said what the problem is. It's late October. Don't tell me they've had plenty. They've played eight games. They've had a spring camp and a fall camp, and they haven't figured things out.
That's right.
That's the issue. That's a big issue, and it starts with coaching.
At some point, you are what you are.
Yeah.
In the defensive backfield, here's when you should have known. When you look back there and you saw the same names at safety, that's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Because either the young guys aren't good enough, they're not getting played, or they don't trust them.
Yeah.
Just the way it goes. I know you secondary is terrible. Joining us now is a voice that you hear right here on these airwaves at 2 o'clock. It is the ultimate Jim Traber. Jim, how are you?
Good morning, fellas. How is it out there in Elk City?
Just a beautiful, sunny day so far. Light breeze, nice, comfortable temperatures. It's kind of getting to that point, though, where you step out in the morning. Shorts are maybe not appropriate, but we wear them anyway because we're not outside for very much. And they come right in the building, and it's totally comfortable.
Shorts are appropriate for 90% of the year.
I would agree with that if it's a nice winter.
I want to tell you guys and all your great listeners out there. Julian Jim Traber podcast is rolling along.
Yes,
a new one comes up today, and we have done. I'm really excited about this one. We have done a two-part podcast. So today, and then a week from today, and it's about the whole situation of me becoming the Diamondbacks announcer.
Cool.
And it's really cool because there are stories that people have not heard on the radio. And Julie's perspective of having to be back here with three little girls while I'm out there and how we handled that and how I went to do radio for a year out there. A lot of people don't know I went to do radio. I did 8 hours of radio a day, four here and four there, every day for a year. It might have been the worst year of my life. But that's how I got this job. And it's really, really good. So for the people that haven't heard the podcast, this is number 4 and number 5. If you want to go listen to them, I think they're really cool. And if you have heard them, I think you're going to really like these. So today it'll pop up around 2 o'clock today.
See, that's great because after we've listened to the first two, we're going to hit the third one and the fourth one tonight on the road trip to Mountain View to watch some fifth grade basketball.
The third one is funny. The third one's good, man.
See,
good, yeah.
My wife said, tell Jim we want to hear about how Julie handles his job because, you know, we do the same thing. Jared and I, you know, we're gone for games and all that kind of stuff. So this is she's going to be excited about this because this is something that she wanted to hear. You know, from Julie's perspective, how she dealt with you being gone and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, this will be really cool. And then I'm sure as we get into it, we'll deal with. I mean, she's a cougar. Only it's not because she's fine as can be as an older woman. She's a cougar when people come after me. I mean, I'm telling you, she won't get on. She won't do like Baker Mayfield's wife did, but she'll do it here at the house. Mm-hmm. When people get on to me. So, yeah, it's good stuff. She's just amazing on this thing. So if you want, it's a Julian Jim Traber podcast. You can go anywhere to get it now on any platform. And I'm really excited about it. So thank you to all the great people in Elk City. How'd the Elks do this week?
52-7 win on the road Thursday night at Cash. And now the game of the year so far. Go over to Clinton. Clinton's 7-1. Elk City's 7-1. But Clinton's loss came non-district, so they're undefeated, leading the district. The Elks are one game behind.
What's turned the Elks around? I mean, they weren't any good the last few years. What is it? I mean, how are they scoring 50 every day?
A little bit of a change in coaching for sure has helped, and then also just those guys that were getting beat down were freshmen and sophomores, and now they're juniors and seniors. And so, you know, it really was kind of men against boys for the last few years, and now it's turned back the other way, and just. You know, like anything, that offensive line, the guys that are starting now, gosh, is this what, the third year straight
yeah.
that it's been the same guys, Jared? Maybe
yeah.
one,
maybe one
you know,
guy
maybe lose one guy
yeah.
interchangeable, but for the most part,
a lot of
you've
experience.
Got, yeah, five guys on the offensive line and a few more that can come off the sidelines and fill in that have all just played together through those beatdowns. And I honestly think losing 23 in a row over a two-year span has motivated them to not want to get back to that, if that makes sense.
Well, good.
Tired of losing.
Well, good. That's beautiful stuff, man. Go Elks.
Yes, and guaranteed a playoff spot, the first real playoff spot in a while since 2017. Last year, everybody made it, which the Elks wouldn't have if it had been a normal year. So it's good stuff.
Tell him if I went into the locker room right now and gave a little speech to him, I'd tell him, don't watch OU's film. That's what I would tell him.
All right, let's start there since you mentioned them first. My gosh, you know, one of the most embarrassing wins in the history of the program would have been, I was racking my brain watching my son play football on Saturday afternoon while kind of keeping updated with the score. Is this the most embarrassing loss ever in the history of the program? I couldn't just think of one worse. But they find a way to win, and that is a positive. And it's crazy to think, with the way you feel about this team, it's the first time OU's been 8-0 since 2004. But it sure doesn't feel like it coming out of Saturday.
Oh, they're 8-0?
Yeah. I mean, that was just a thorough embarrassment. I mean, just terrible football. And I'll tell you what, dude, and fellas, if they didn't have Caleb Williams, they'd have two losses. They're guaranteed. I mean, he made some plays in that game I've never seen in my life. All my years of watching football, I've never seen somebody steal the ball from somebody else and do what he did. And then again, the touchdown run, same thing as in Texas, yeah. Guys. There's two guys there ready to tackle him, and he gets away and goes for a touchdown. Just amazing what that kid can do. I will tell you this, guys. This is what I noticed. I noticed that every single game, and it has been pretty much almost every single game, after the game, Lincoln Riley says, you know, we're going to get there. We're really close. It's going to happen. After this game, he did not say that. He said, I think we can still get there. I'm telling you, the frustration from these coaches, and by the way, they're to blame too, but the frustration for these coaches, you can see it massively. I listened to Grinch after the game as well, and he is just thoroughly disgusted. You know, this four-star, five-star thing, and then they got people that – defensive line. Let's forget about the defensive backfield because the big Sooner fans are going to cry about, well, we don't have Woody Washington and we don't have Turner Yell. Okay, what about the defensive line? Okay, they got dudes that are supposedly first and second, you know, round picks in the NFL, and they're terrible. I mean, they're terrible. So I don't know what it is. I know that if they play like they did yesterday, they've got two losses coming ahead. And I'm surprised that people didn't move them further down in the deal. Now, remember, the guys that are in that committee room, you know, ex-coaches and stuff like that, guys, they don't have to have them number four right now. You know, I'm sure they're thinking this team isn't that good. But if they lose a game, you know, OSU dropped an amazing amount, which I was a little bit surprised. If OU loses a game after the way things have gone this block too, which I think will just kill them. And because this league is just not any good, I'm more and more convinced that I think OU has to go undefeated to get in this thing. And they might. I mean, heck, they're figuring ways out to win, but I don't know. Baylor and Iowa State and OSU, none of them are scared of OU right now. A lot of years you think, gosh, man, OU, they're really – no. They're just kind of there. They're the best team in the league right now, but they're not a great team. So I think OU has to win every game the rest of the year to get into it more than likely, unless crazy things happen. Because I'll tell you what, if Ohio State runs the ledger, guys, they're not getting in over – I mean, OU's not getting in over them. And what about Oregon? Their league stinks too, but they got a great win at Ohio State. So I think they got to run it out, fellas. I really do.
Yeah, the one loss thing, it might work against undefeated Cincinnati, but it's not going to work against either one of those two teams you just said with the momentum that they've built. Ohio State especially, you look around a lot of these shows after the games on Saturday, ESPN won, that both of those guys had them number two ahead of everybody but Georgia with the way that they played. You know, that's all going to shake out. That Big Ten East, huge loss for Penn State, kind of makes things a little bit more understandable as far as what could happen. But right now, I mean – to talk about OU being able to make it to the playoffs seems silly with the way that they're playing. And the only reason to me they're 8-0 proves that the league isn't any good and their schedule isn't any good, because if they'd have played somebody good so far, they'd have beat them.
Well, let's remember that the only win that Tulane has is against the Division II team. They can't beat anybody. And we thought, wow, this is a good team, and that quarterback can play. Nope. Every quarterback that has played against OU looks better than he is. It's crazy. It's unbelievable. These guys, some of them are hurt, but they don't care. They still play. you know, this kid for Kansas, he's just struggling and struggling. And, if you watch that game, you think, man, that guy's got a really good future. Maybe he does. But, boy, I'll tell you what, playing against OU's defense right now, you got a chance to look good. And then they're not, they can't get a pass rush. I don't know. It's kind of mind-boggling to me. And I don't know if you guys saw, but they were playing, like, true freshmen. The kid from Weatherford played a bunch. Mm-hmm. The Stutzman kid played a bunch. I mean, they're disgusted with some of these older players. And remember, what was it that Grinch said? He said that we believe in practice, and there's some that don't believe, or something like that. I don't know, man. There's some problems happening on this team.
But that's the biggest baffler, right? It's these guys have shown that, you know, the Benitos and the Isaiah Thomases and that group has shown that they can get back there on a consistent basis. And then the last two games, they've got, what, 8 hurries and 1 sack? And listen, that sack shouldn't almost even count as a stat because it was on the next-to-last play of the game when it was over. So in all actuality, they've got 8 hurries in 2 games against the offenses of Kansas and TCU. You know, I don't know how good anybody thought the secondary was, but people thought that defensive line was good. And it started out, and it was pretty good to start, but, man, it has disappeared over the past 2.5-3 games.
You're right. Did you see what West Virginia's defense did to TCU?
Yeah.
I mean, shut them down, right? What'd they score, 17 points or something? I don't know, man. I'm just mind-boggling, and I'm not making millions of dollars as a coach. I'm sure they are, too. I will say this, though. I think Grinch is in a dilemma because if he blitzes, then he leaves dudes that can't cover anybody one-on-one. It's just that simple, all right? And if he doesn't blitz, then the guy just stands back there and he runs the zone and they beat him in the zone. So either way, he blitzed like a crazy man, and it worked. So I don't know. I mean, look, I could say, well, they didn't, it's Kansas. Well, I don't care. They almost lost the game. If he doesn't get that first, if he doesn't pull that ball out, is there anybody that doesn't think that Kansas is going to score? I think they are. So, yeah, and then, by the way, they ran that beautiful reverse. You don't even run a reverse against Kansas, right? Why would you do that? You're usually beating them with just vanilla. But Lincoln Riley had to pull out a daggone reverse against Kansas. So, this is crazy stuff, fellas. This whole year has been really crazy.
Last thing about OU before we move on, get your thoughts about OSU. You mentioned Caleb Williams and that crazy play. How about Caleb Williams himself? Have you ever seen somebody like this come in and have an impact on a team like he has in his first two starts? I mean, without him, like you said, you're right, they're 0-2. I mean, they lose their last 2 games, 3 games maybe.
I mean, he just knows how to play the game, fellas. He's got great instincts. You know, who does that? Who pulls the ball out of the guy's hand? I would say that Trevor Lawrence, when he was a freshman, did some of this stuff. And there's some others. I mentioned Mississippi have the, but no, this is special. I mean, really, really special. So when you combine a great arm with unbelievable speed and the instincts that he has and the poise, wow! I mean, that's absurdly special, you know. And by the way, Joel Klatt, I guess Joel Klatt apologized last week, is from what I understand.
Yeah, I saw that.
Dead wrong. I don't know, maybe he heard that I was killing him for 2 weeks. Maybe that's why he apologized. He was dead wrong. But, it's night and day. I mean, this kid is so much better than Spencer Rattler. It's not even funny. And that's really sad because Rattler was going to be the preseason All-American. So that's just crazy.
OSU, Iowa State, that game went about like everyone thought. It was going to be close, a little bit of offense, mostly defense, and plays at the end of the game were going to matter. OSU was unable, we had text this morning, what is wrong with the goalposts? They're hexed against the Cowboys up in Ames. A really good game that Oklahoma State just couldn't figure out, especially in the third quarter. I felt like the third down offense went over in the second half, and that was kind of the difference. They couldn't sustain those drives in the third quarter when Iowa State was trying to make the comeback.
Yeah, you can't miss field goals like that, fellas, against a team that's good. I mean, that's the first thing. I thought that, I picked Iowa State to win the game. I did not realize that Spencer Sanders was going to play one of his best games he's ever played. That throw that he made to Tay Martin, yep, fellas, is that is next level. That's like Kyler Murray in the NFL kind of throw. But you know, you just I mean, I said all week it was going to be the battle of who played better at quarterback. And although I think that Spencer Sanders played great, I think that Purdy played a little better. And what I mean that is that maybe he didn't have the touchdowns and stuff, but he made a couple more plays. That's a tough loss. I mean, OSU was right there. I mean, if they win that game, fellas, don't you think they might move ahead of OU in the ranks? They might have moved up to number 4 or at least 5 or 6. So, tough loss. Now they got to run the table. I mean, that's what they have to do. And there's a great chance, guys, that they'll be 10-1 going into the OU game because, frankly, they're going to be better than every team they play the rest of the way. So, tough loss. Now Iowa State puts themselves back in. They got to be kicking themselves for how bad they played early in the season. And, you know, I knew that they would shut down or at least slow down Warren, and then it was going to be on Spencer Sanders, and Spencer Sanders did really, really good things. OSU did a nice job against Breece Hall, but, boy, the what's his name, Hutchinson, wow, that kid, he made a bunch of plays, and then Kohler made a couple, and that was basically the ball game. So tough loss for OSU. They played well, though. It wasn't like, you know, you can't come on here and go, oh, they did this and they did that. They did it. They just lost to a team. I love what Mike Gundy said after the game. You make plays, and one team made more plays than them. I think that there's going to be a bunch of people crying today about, you know, whether the kid was made a first down. I think he did make a first down because he was laying on top of his own guy. I think it was a bad call. But who knows what they do from that point, right? Mm-hmm. You never know. There were other calls in the game, I'm sure, that could have gone the other way for Iowa State. But, you know, tough loss, really tough loss. They played good. They played a good game. Oklahoma State's good, fellas. If you guys remember at the beginning of the year, I said if I wasn't doing a sports talk radio show, I would have bet the over with both teams in mm-hmm. this year. And OSU at the time was 8. So I thought they were going to win 9 games, but now I think they guaranteed to win 9 games unless they fall apart. And OU was 11. So I don't know about that one. We'll see.
Yeah, that last play, the fourth down, it was one of those where you're 95% sure that he made it because of where he was laying on top of the guy and of his own guy across the 40. But it's that indisputable evidence thing that always pops up on those replays, and you just simply couldn't see the dadgum ball ever. And once he got in that scrum, you just couldn't find it to be able to verify that, yep, there it is, touching the 40 or at least just across the 40. It's a tough break. I think even most Iowa State fans think he made the first down, but unfortunately you have to be positive about it, and that's just the way it went. Uh-oh, do we lose him?
I think the referees, you got me back?
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, gotcha.
I think the referees, I think that the stopping forward progress is getting ridiculous. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, there were 2 calls in OU that went 1 for OU and 1 against OU because the play that Caleb Williams made, I mean, when he pulled the ball out, my gosh, the dude had gone back 3 or 4 yards. When are you going to stop it, you know?
Right.
And then the one with OU when they ran that fourth down quarterback sneak where they weren't even close to it and it just kept standing there and standing there and standing there and then suddenly they pushed forward.
Yeah.
I mean, when are they going to blow the whistle on this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's the same with this play. You know, he looked like he was stopped and then an offensive lineman pulls him, which I think I've told you guys before. I hate that.
Right.
I cannot stand the rules where you could just push your own guy. That makes no sense to me. It goes against everything that I believe in sports. You know, you shouldn't be able to do that. So, anyway, interesting games, man. Good stuff. We got a lot more. Unfortunately, OSU plays Kansas this week. And then, by the way, OU better for Texas. Texas playing pretty good, guys. They got a really, really good running back. So they better figure it out. Texas Tech will light
them
up, too.
Let's go to the NFL. Within the Steelers division yesterday, maybe the shocker so far of the season, maybe not that the Bengals beat the Ravens, but just how much they dominated the Ravens on the road in Baltimore. I know it's easy to talk about Josh Allen and then also Justin Herbert as kind of the heir apparents, Kyler Murray Where does Joe Burrow fit in that conversation? Because all he's been doing is performing at a high level in his year and a half in the league so far. Uh-oh, he dropped completely.
We lost him. And that was a great question, too. I was hoping that you'd start with Cincinnati and their beatdown of the Ravens. And, man, not just Joe Burrow, but I think a big thing for him is Ja'Marr Chase. When he has 8 grabs and 201 yards, 1 touchdown, they could not stop him. And when Lamar Jackson can't get it going, that team is completely inept. That was huge for the Bengals, who now I think are actually our playoff contenders, absolutely, with a win like that. That's going to turn a lot of heads. We got Jim back?
Yeah, we got Jim. Hey, I was asking you about yesterday in the NFL. Yeah. My gosh, the Bengals, just a shocking domination. Where is not only them, but also Joe Burrow? Where does he rank in that young quarterback hierarchy? Because he's been really good when he's been on the field so far in his year and a half.
Burrow's really good, yeah, really good. And I don't know what the Ravens were doing. I mean, Cincinnati, you give it up to them, obviously. And you know they beat the Steelers early in the year too. It's kind of disgusting to be a Steelers fan when you got to like think that Cleveland and Cincinnati are good. I mean, that's really kind of a hard thing to like fathom. But, yeah, no, that's a great win for them. And they're now tied for the lead in the division. That's crazy. And the Steelers, by the way, they stink, and they're only one game out. So I don't know what's going on in the NFL. There's so many crazy games here and there. But, yeah, Cincinnati, you got to give it up to them. You really do. I will tell you this, though, fellas. The Kansas City Chiefs are done. D-U-N, done. They're out. They're not going anywhere. The dreaded curse of the Super Bowl loser. They are terrible. Their defense stinks. Mahomes is trying to do too much. They're done. They're done.
Yeah, we actually had a question about that from one of our listeners. It feels like the NFL's figured him out. Don't let Tyreek go deep. Keep him in front of you and make Mahomes get impatient and start throwing interceptions or turning the ball over, trying to make extra plays. And golly, Tennessee just ran right over them yesterday. It's weird to see a team that has been as good as they have for 3 years just kind of lose it to start this season. And you're right. In that division, that's better than anybody thought it was going to be. And the way that everything else is shaken out, Kansas City's way behind the eight ball right now, halfway through the season.
Absolutely, because they got 2 teams ahead of them. I mean, 2 of them, with the Chargers and the Raiders. So, yeah, they're in big trouble. Big, big trouble. And by the way, before I go, I just want to say congratulations. The Russell Westbrook to the Lakers is working out tremendously. I mean, I bet you the people of L.A. are so happy that he's home and he's comfortable. Good for them. Good for Russell Westbrook. With 9 turnovers. You know what he's shooting from 3 so far this year?
10%.
9%. You were wrong. You're way too high. 9%. Which, by the way, is barely worse than the Thunder players. Their 3 best players are all under 20%. So, yeah, Russell Westbrook, that is a beautiful thing, man. They're already talking about whether he fits out there. I could have told you I wasn't going to fit.
That didn't take a rocket scientist to
figure
out.
Well, thank goodness
that.
They got Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
Got him their first win.
You're
last
right.
Night.
No, Carmelo is shooting the ball well. You're right. Amazing. Hey, one last thing, guys. Did you see the Lakers game when Rondo was the fan reached out and touched him?
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yeah, on Friday night.
Fellas, okay, so let me ask you all a question, okay? You're sitting on in the first row, you're saying something, you're doing something, and a player points his finger right in your face, and then you push his hand out of the way, and you get thrown out of the arena. Is that and then Doris Burke, I mean, she went crazy. Doris Burke was going, that person should never come back into the arena. Is that what? So players are allowed to like taunt people in the first row, and if they push their hands out of their face, they're done? I mean, come on, man. Who are these people? Are they gods? Are they kings? I think that's a shame, man. That dude, if he gets kicked out forever, that's an embarrassment to the NBA, a total embarrassment to the NBA.
Just the way that league's run, you know, you feel like it probably will happen because the players run the thing. Adam Silver allows them to.
Yeah, I can't believe Rondo. I mean, he's got his finger in the dude's face, and all the guy does is push his hand out of the way, and he gets thrown out of the arena. Unbelievable, man. I'm just sick of it.
How excited are you for the World Series starting tomorrow night down in Atlanta? I think it's hilarious and really kind of ironic that the All-Star game got moved out of Atlanta for some political nonsense, and now the World Series is going to be forced to be there. I think that's pretty yeah, hilarious.
That is funny.
I like that. I like that. I may use it on my show. I'm actually not excited at all. I mean, I mean, baseball to me is just so bad. I want the Braves to win, you know, because of the Houston cheaters. I do love Dusty Baker. I mean, I don't want Houston to win anything. It'd be a shame. But I love what you just said. That's going to be the number one thing I say about it. It kicked them out, and now for them they got the World Series. How ironic! Huh?
Yeah, and you would think if what they were standing up for really mattered, the World Series would be a lot bigger stage to protest this on than just the All-Star game. I think the silence will tell you everything you need to know about what happened back in July with the All-Star game getting moved for political theater is what I would call that.
I like that
decision. Well,
I
Jim,
like it a lot.
Tell us again, podcast 2 o'clock. What you got? Yeah, a two-parter. Tell everybody about that.
Two-parter about my time with the Arizona Diamondbacks. It is really, you know, I mean, I got a World Series ring because of it. It's crazy, but all the way the year went, how I got the job, how it was for Julie and the girls. It's really good stuff. Really good stuff. Plus, there's an update too on our dieting, which just stinks. But that's another story.
Hey, Jim, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be listening today at 2.
All right, fellas, thanks. See ya.
See you later. That's the Ultimate Jim Traber joining us on a Monday, as he does each and every Monday throughout the year when he's available. Good stuff.
Absolutely, as always.
We'll dig further into, I think the Bengals thing is really interesting. I know you probably got a family member, an in-law that's as fired up as anybody in Oklahoma.
We don't take like song requests, but I did take a request before we went to air. You guys got to talk about the Bengals.
Yeah,
I knew it was coming.
And here's another thing. Remember back when we were choosing quarterbacks? Who picked Burrow? Oh, it was me. What do I talk about?
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.